The first case on our docket this afternoon is 25-10562, Sneed versus Crown Equipment Corporation. Mr. Montgomery.
My name is Gordon. I'm the lead attorney.
Okay.
What was the question?
Mr. Killick. Okay, this is what I have.
Oh, I must have the outdated one. I'm sorry. Yes, Mr. Kiley. Thank you. I apologize.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. Dennis Kulledge for the appellant, Devrin Sneed, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. This case is about a forklift that Crown Equipment has had exclusive contracts or responsibility to maintain, monitor, and repair. Crown's own records show this truck logged error code 319 255 times over its life, 8 times in the hours surrounding the accident. Crown tried to fix the exact fault 4 months earlier and wrote on its own work order that the unit was still coding out. Crown returned it to service anyway. On December 2022, Mr. Sneed was traveling at 3 miles an hour. Crown's specifications say that the truck stops in 34 inches. He had more than 10 feet instead of stopping.
Sir, if you could look up, you have plenty of time. You didn't file a reply brief.
Yes.
So there are several cases and assertions that they made that you haven't responded to. Some of them are more central to your brief. They couldn't find the case Stanzi versus Dacomed. It's a Texas decision that you cite at 29 and again at 56 for the proposition that voluntarily assumed standards, not mandatory ones, don't trigger the presumption. So my question is, does that case exist, Hansi?
Not as it is cited in the brief, Judge.
Okay. So when that happens, you need to send us an acknowledgement in errata form. The case doesn't exist at all. Is there a Texas case that stands for the proposition that you cited it for?
The proposition itself is actually engraved in the statute of 82.008. The citation that was provided in the brief, and I apologize to court and the opposing party for this mistake. The proposition that it cites that the adoption of a voluntary code is not the same as a governmental authority approving a certain standard. In this case, the only authority that the Crown had proposed that the BNC and B5.6 was the
OSHA 1910.
Yes.
That looks mandatory to me.
Judge, that was the version that was approved by OSHA was the 1956 version, not the 2010 version or any other versions after 1956.
So you're relying on this on the OSHA rule itself. You don't have a case. Another proposition, you've asserted that there was bias from the magistrate. In their response brief, they say Fifth Circuit law requires you to bring that to the district court's attention. Without a reply brief, do you have any answer, or do you acknowledge that that claim is not before us?
I acknowledge that, Judge.
Okay. Then the third one is they cite a case called Guy versus Crown. It's the same Crown as a defendant.
Mm-hmm.
It's the exact same issue. Is a district court using its authority to exclude experts where the feasible alternatives are not tested or proven reliable.
Mm-hmm.
Without a reply brief, we don't know what your response to that is. Did you know that case, Guy versus Crown?
Yes, Judge.
Okay, and do you have a response, or are we in the same situation?
I would like to provide an oral response. If
yes,
possible.
Of course.
The case at hand, Judge, the both experts provided three different alternatives as a reasonably safer option. So the case facts don't match with the...
Okay,
with
so it's a factual person. Distinction.
Yes.
The last question I have, just again, without a reply brief, is when you began your oral presentation, you said what you said in the brief, which is that there was embedded in this forklift, or at the time, simultaneous real-time monitoring showing error codes 319. And you just began by saying that again.
Yes, Judge.
When I looked at your record sites for that, and you give two, you cite 2779 and you cite 2826. 2779 just states that they had a forklift, and 2826 just describes the specifications. Those are the two record sites you gave. So here's my question. Where in the record do we find that there was a ban live monitoring system that told technicians at Crown that they were having these error codes prior to and during the incident? Where in the record?
Judge, I'm looking at page 14 of our final brief. It references a record on appeal 531.
531 is their expert, correct? 531 is their expert's report. It's a post-incident report a year after the incident.
Yes, Judge.
But the proposition you stated in your brief, citing the citations I gave you, mm-hmm. implied that they have real-time monitoring. So these error codes, accelerating, not braking, occurred at the time, and their technicians knew it. They were on notice. What's your record support for that proposition?
Again, on the same page, Judge, I'm looking at 529.
So you're looking at the opposing counsel's expert post-incident report.
That is the only record that we have, Judge, yes.
Okay, so the two sites that I described that you gave me, mm-hmm. those don't stand for the proposition. Though you don't have any of your own evidence standing for the fact that they had a log and that forklift was sending out symbols. The only authority you have is the post-incident report from the expert, which describes error reports a year later.
We also have Mr. Sneed's own testimony saying that the forklift had actually shown the error code 319.
Right. Sneed did say he looked down and he saw they were errors. But you, throughout your brief, you've premised most of your case on the fact that the company had simultaneous error logs that recorded throughout this incident things going wrong. You still think that's true or not? And
Judge,
if you do, is your only authority the one now you're citing, which is the expert's brief?
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
So you're saying, yes, you do maintain that the record somewhere says there's real-time monitoring.
Yes, I do. Records that were provided to our experts had the logs that essentially showed the error codes and the times and dates that they were associated with the forklift.
Okay, now just stop there, because
yes.
that's a different answer. The records that were provided to your experts, so where are the record sites for those showing real-time notice to the company? What is your record support for that proposition?
The only record that I can propose is the records for the work orders that were produced by the by
okay,
Crown.
Well, give me those. What are those record sites? If you don't have them right now, you can give them in rebuttal. If you need to look at them.
Yes,
is
yes.
that what you need to do?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And thank you for allowing me the chance to correct the citations.
Did you check your brief for hallucinated citations?
I have after receiving Crown's response, yes. The only one that I was I found that would be hallucinated was the Tenzi one. And then there was one more, Ackerman versus Wyeth. That one doesn't exist either. But the rest of the propositions in the brief are accurate and they're properly cited. On the district court level, the exclusion of the experts and then the granting of the motion for summary judgments, it's our belief that the motion for summary judgment should not have been granted. There were errors that the record essentially shows. And the MSJ mainly relies on the the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure and Remedies Code 82.008, a rebuttable presumption that if a governmental authority has proven a certain design or a certain product, that there's a presumption that the manufacturer or the seller shouldn't be liable for the machine. But here, there is no government code that has actually approved the design of NCB 5.6. The only version of NCB 5.6 that was approved was the 1969 version and not the relied on version by Crown, which was 2010. As to the expert exclusion, the standard is abuse of discretion. Here, the ruling rests on...
I thought the standard is manifestly erroneous.
Excuse me.
The standard for us to assess the propriety of a Daubert exclusion is, was the district court manifestly erroneous? Correct, or you disagree?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. The court excluded Mr. Bullen on the finding that he did no testing and offered only concepts. His sworn affidavit on the record showed that he tested alternative optical switches for function and for dust and debris sensitivity. And in his report, he confirmed that the alternative switch to was less likely to produce the false signal that caused the accident. And that was the first alternative that the Bullen's report has suggested. Then the second alternative, reprogramming the controller to break automatically on a sensor fault, that would have been, we don't even need Bullen's report for that. Crown's own witness, Mr. Grice, has testified that Crown had the ability to program the forklift exactly to that function, and which the manufacturer admits that it could implement in software, which would be feasible and as a matter of common sense. 10 days after the incident itself, Crown's own technicians reproduced the same sensor fault, and they immediately locked out the machine as too dangerous to operate. And this was a human performed by hand, the same fail-safe. Bullen says that the software should have performed automatically. The other expert that was excluded was Dr. Kerrigan, a director of the University of Virginia Center for Applied Biomechanics. He applied the same peer-reviewed methodology that he uses in his federally funded work. Essentially, the work itself had validated postural equilibrium research explaining why an operator who lifts his left foot to brake in a machine that requires lifting a foot to brake involuntarily extends that leg to keep his balance. But this is essentially what the Dr. Kerrigan stated, that it's the settled biomechanics law, that the court essentially disagreed with his proposition that that there was no causation based on his report. We believe that should have been a jury issue, a fact issue, as opposed to judges' evaluation of it. On the motion for summary judgment, dismissal of motion for summary judgment, I've already addressed the 82.008 non-application in this case because there's no governmental code that actually applied to the design or the manufacturing of the product. And secondly, Crown had a contractual agreement to inspect, maintain, and repair this forklift. The court dismissed these claims for lack of expert testimony on the standard of care that the Crown had to abide by. The Crown owns manual requires cleaning dust and debris from the sensors. Its technician that was actually actively working, Mr. Walker, had testified that he was not aware of what dust or debris had to do with the operation of the machine on his testimony. And 11 days before the accidents, Crown's paperwork says that the sensors were clean and blown off. And the post-incident accident inspection also found the sensors to be covered in debris. We believe that a jury does not need an engineer to tell it's that the returning knownly unrepaired equipment to service or signing off on its cleaning without really making sure that it's properly functioning falls below reasonable care, and an expert this exclusion of that claim for lack of expert report, we believe that that is not the standard that the court should have looked at. I believe that is my time, Judge.
Thank you. Save time for rebuttal.
Yes.
Mr. Cullen.
May it please the court. My name is Tom Cullen. I have the honor of representing Crown in connection with the matter. It's a distinct honor to be in this courthouse, in the courtroom. Absolutely magnificent. Beautiful place to argue. I will focus my argument today on two issues, mainly because there are several issues here, but I wanted to focus on Judge Horan's, we believe, correct decision to exclude the experts in this matter and their complete absence of any reliable support for their testimony, and also the grounds that he used and Judge Kincaid used to grant summary judgment here. But I did want to address Judge Higginson's question about the band specs, which we have corrected in this case so many times.
This is footnote 7 of your brief.
Yes. There is no such thing as a system where, as these hundreds of thousands of forklifts are running around our society, that anyone's getting real-time data regarding how these are operating. The band specs, which we have explained to counsel many times, are merely a listing of what is included in this forklift. It's a building page where you basically list the specifications so it can be built to that specification. We have an event code system, but it does not give real-time data to anyone. It's not as if these technicians, who have a lot of work to do, by the way, because that's what they do, they're at a Target warehouse, they're at a Walmart warehouse, they are basically working on machines when someone distinctly ask them to work on machines because there's a problem, or when they're conducting planned maintenance, which we do. So any suggestion that this band specification and the citations they made to it, it's just clearly not supported by anything in this record, nor could it be, frankly. I'm not criticizing counsel for that, because that doesn't exist.
Well, and there is some criticism if a brief is built around that proposition.
Agree with that. But I'm saying, in other words, I'm not suggesting that they're just failing to cite someone. That's just
The 2 points that they did cite to, could I correctly say those just indicate the forklift had specifications?
Absolutely.
But then we do come to what was mentioned before, which is 531.
Right.
Do you pronounce his name Grise?
Grise. Ron Grise.
Okay, so Grise gave a great deal of information.
He did.
And there is this one page where, and I'm looking at it here, it
sure.
says recorded event history, and it does have an error code 319. But then the description from your expert is, I guess I should just ask you.
Sure.
That is a year after the incident. That has nothing to do with simultaneous error codes?
They're not. There's no way to determine if they happened at the time of this accident.
Okay.
There's hour codes there, so they're within certain hours. And that's that first number, 72. I'm blanking on the exact number right now.
Yeah, it's an hour, but it looks like it's September of 23.
Yeah. And there are some that are that.
It was a year earlier.
Exactly. There are many that are a year early. And what I want Your Honor to appreciate is those are event codes where the machine is talking to itself. Most of those get reconciled within the machine, and there's no repair ever needed. But there are some event codes which stop the machine. The machine cannot operate any further, and you have to get it checked out. The codes that are listed there are not. They can be someone keying a machine on and off, and you generate a code. For instance, the first two, 105, we know were generated, and even though their expert says that shows there's something wrong with the truck, we know they were generated after the fact at an inspection with an improper key on and off because it was in tow mode. So again, and the main point, I believe, for your honors, is when you're looking at the summary judgment here, plaintiff raised a claim that there was evidence that Crown negligently maintained this truck. And we believe there is zero basis. Judge Horan agreed, as well as Judge Kincaid. Because, first of all, they didn't even nominate an expert, designate any expert to evaluate the maintenance on this truck, which we contend was extremely reasonable. Whenever there was a problem, we came and fixed it.
What does error code 319 mean?
That is a code where two of the brake switches aren't communicating well. And when they shows there's a distinction there, what will happen is the brake will come on. Because in that situation, it senses that those switches are out of alignment. And so that's what else I want to tell you. There's no evidence 319 occurred in this case at all. Zero.
Okay.
And when it does occur...
And I want to let you get to your two main points, but this is relevant factual. So when I'm looking at your expert's evidence, it indicates these are generated during a post-accident inspection almost a year later.
Yes.
So these
yes.
are not simultaneous codes popping up exactly when the man lost his leg.
They're not. No. Okay. They're not.
Okay.
And what... The reason I want you to really appreciate this is these codes happen in this machine. It talks to itself, and if there's a problem that occurs in performance, it is then reported to the user in this case, which would have been Target, and then Crown can't have an opportunity to come in and fix it. We produced every piece of our maintenance data for the year before this accident. Plaintiff had it for years. There's no expert opinion in this case, zero, that said those records support a claim against Crown for negligent maintenance. And what Judge Horan correctly ruled is that you cannot just throw band specs out. It's been seen three times. It had an event code 2 years ago. It had an event code 2 months ago. And suggest that correlates to a negligent maintenance claim. You must show by competent expert testimony that it is reliably founded and there is truly a maintenance claim. Plaintiff did not do that here. We challenged them to do that. There's no expert testimony whatsoever. Neither of their experts even commented on the maintenance of this truck. This is all argument. And so that's one of the summary judgment positions. Turning back to his decision on their design claim, because interestingly here, you're presented with several claims. Most of them have several reasons they should not stand as a matter of law. The product liability design defect claim, Judge Horan and Judge Kincaid properly dismissed that on summary judgment on two grounds. One, that it did not, there's a presumption of non-liability here because it does meet the standard. But the second was, there's no reliable expert evidence in this case that there was a design defect, that there was a safer alternative design, or that any design they even proposed would have had any impact on this accident. And I'll go through each of those factors.
You don't reach the expert exclusion if the presumption applies.
You do not. And it's correct the other way, too. Even if the presumption doesn't apply and they don't have competent expert testimony, there's no valid design defect claim. So here, but starting with the presumption, because I know Your Honors, first of all, had seen some of the support by plaintiff's counsel in this case, and it truly was a misstatement of both the statute and the law supporting it. It's rare when you see the statute itself, and there's two specific instances where they argue that in Texas what you must do is show that the design standards go specifically to the specific design at issue in the case. And they cite to 82008B in quotes. And that's just inaccurate. I mean, that's a one-page statute. And that's done on page 55 and 57 of their brief. But the correct law is you must show it meets a standard that has been promulgated or adopted by a federal standard. In this case, ANSI B 56.1 is the recognized U.S. standard for the manufacture of stand-up forklifts like this one and, frankly, many other types of powered industrial trucks.
And just tell me again, standard 56.1, how does that relate to OSHA 1910?
B56.1 is the standard that's adopted by OSHA 1910.1781. And it is directly in the regulation of OSHA that is adopted. We provided case law which shows it's been adopted, and the actual, we even included in the record the OSHA 19.10.17 reference and the entire regulation that includes that. So once we establish, which we have here, that we have met that standard, we are meeting a necessarily mandatory obligation from OSHA to comply with this standard, plaintiff can then rebut that. And plaintiff has two methods to do it. However, plaintiff cited in their brief, the only cases they cited were cases that show four methods, the Ackerman case, which do not exist. It's a complete fabrication. And then they argue that they met those alleged exemptions, but they're not in the statute, nor are they in the law of Texas. But we highlighted for your honors the two that do apply. You can show that this standard was not sufficient to truly protect users in Texas, you know, that it, the standard is not robust enough to be a truly protective measure. The ANSI standard is so well respected. OSHA has been around for years. This standard is so comprehensive. It involves all of the design aspects in this case, braking, steering, travel. The OSHA regulation itself says we do this to prevent accidents that can cause fatalities, including collisions, including operators being pinned against things, which is exactly what happened here. The content of that regulation absolutely discusses the product harm at issue here. And when we challenge plaintiffs to say that they have evidence that we should rebut that, they could rebut that presumption, they produce no evidence. And if you look at the case law, the Milbank decision, the American Honda decision, and others, they need competent expert testimony to say, here's why we believe that standard is inadequate. It's not comprehensive enough. It is limited to this area, which is not relevant to this case. It doesn't truly protect Texas citizens from collisions and accidents such as this. They didn't do it here because they couldn't. Because this standard is extremely extensive and covers the braking, the steering, the travel functions that they complain of here. The second thing they could do is show, to rebut the presumption, that under Texas law, we provided the government information which misled them in terms of coming to this decision to adopt this standard. And members of the panel, there's zero evidence of that. Zero. Texas law is very clear, we believe, and as the American Honda decision said, it's usually a pretty straightforward decision. Does the presumption apply? Both of their experts acknowledge that this is the standard. Both of their experts acknowledge that our truck meets the standard. They did not rebut the presumption. And accordingly, the product design case, we believe, must fail on that grounds. There's also another grounds on that. After these experts were excluded, Texas law is very clear that you must have expert support to challenge a complex instrumentality such as a forklift. And we cited many cases that say that. Everyone from automotive cases to the Guy case to other cases which deal with complicated instrumentalities like this. And Judge Horan, and then adopted by Judge Kincaid, both said there's no evidence of a safer alternative design here, and there's no evidence that their suggestions could have had any impact on this accident. So we believe the motion for summary judgment was well reviewed, well analyzed, and comprehensively supported in two extremely detailed opinions, a 28 and a 30-page opinion by Judge Horan. And the last thing I want to address.
Remind me, did Kincaid do much separate analysis of the exclusion of the experts, or he just accepted Horan's?
He accepted. There were one-page orders saying that, but he did say he did a de novo review and addressed their objections. They filed objections to Judge Horan's initial report. But it was a fairly limited response, typically a page or a little over a page on one of them. But if you look at the backdrop of that, why their experts were dismissed in this case and excluded, I believe, correctly. That decision, which then leads to the summary judgment on the product design issue as well, was absolutely supported by the record here. Both of these witnesses, I'll start with Kerrigan. He proposed two design concepts.
He's qualified. He's a PhD.
He's a PhD. He's a biomechanical engineer. We raised the contention that he was not qualified because he didn't know anything about forklifts. Court overruled that. And we're not obviously not here to talk about that. But we feel strongly that when you suggest, I'll start with the background sensor, that I think this truck should have a background sensor. I asked him, can you show me a drawing? Where would you put it? I haven't done that. Can you give me anything? Do you have a napkin? Were you sitting at Chili's one night and drawing this? Like, where is it? I haven't done any of that. Have I prototyped it? No. Mocked it? No. Again, where would you put it? I don't know. Where do operators typically have their back against the backrest? Well, I don't know that either. Then I asked him, well, didn't Mr. Sneed say that he, right before his accident, he was against the backrest? Yes, he did. Do you think that would have prevented the accident? I really don't. I think you still need the door. That's the kind of analysis we were left with. The briefs aren't that long in that regard because there's nothing they've done. Have you done any testing on this alleged backrest sensor? No.
Is this roughly what happened in the other Crown forklift case?
It absolutely is. And so then we turned to the door, which was very similar to this. Have you developed any type of door? No. And he said, it wasn't my job to do that. Well, but it is. If you're going to come to Texas and you have the obligation of proving a design defect, the statute, I mean, the law requires you to have a safer alternative design. He hasn't built a door. He can't tell us if he wants it latched or spring-loaded, which is hugely significant because a spring-loaded door, which he tends to talk about, all that operator does when he sticks his leg out, it opens. And injuries may, in fact, be worse. So we have no concept to attack. He has no mock-ups. He has no testing whatsoever. Any knowledge. Have you ever tested a door? No. How can you show it's a safer alternative? I haven't tested the door. He's not done one test. The Casey opinion, the Guy opinion, the American Honda opinion is very clear under Texas law. If you're going to challenge something and prove it's a safer alternative design, you must test that.
Safer and feasible?
Safer and feasible. And we even said,
cost element.
It's hard to establish those when you can't get them to even say what the concept is. So how can he say this was feasible economically when he can't say, and we laid them out in the brief, the weight of the door, the size of the door, how do you latch it? How will it open? Because he knows the standard requires these operators to get off this truck in the event of an off-the-dock or tip-over accident. And they are at tremendous risk of injury if they don't get off. So this door issue is critical. And ANSI's looked at it and said, this truck must have an open operator compartment because it's safer to get off the truck than ride it down in some of these accident scenarios. So this is a life-critical issue in these cases. And what Judge Horan correctly ruled, you can't just come here and say, in this accident scenario, I'd like a door, not address what type of door, never test it, never build it, and then mandate that opinion.
He has a manufacturer's defect claim and he's got a duty to warn claim.
He does. And the manufacturer's defect claim, I think, is very simple. There has been no evidence here. Neither of his experts opined. They both had seven opinions. None of them opined there was any manufacturing defect here. They both had challenges to the design. There's not one piece of evidence in this record that anything about this truck deviated in any way, shape, or form from any specification, from any other Crown design truck of similar magnitude. In other words, this truck was built the way it should have been built. It's the opposite of a manufacturing defect case, and there was zero evidence to support that.
And it's undisputed it had warnings on?
Undisputed that the warnings about this particular hazard, a leg injury, there's warnings all over the product. We cited them in the brief. You must keep your legs and arms within the running lines of this truck. Be in the proper operating position. Again, do not step off this truck until it completely stops.
Remind me, did your expert hazard any opinion as to why it happened? Is it, for example, and this is, yes. I should know the record better, is it accepted that there was dust that may have interfered with the brake and acceleration or not at all?
That in fact, all the evidence is contrary to that. And our experts did. Both of their experts, which is another one of Judge Horan's points, said very clearly they can't even evaluate this accident. They don't know if there was a plucking failure, a braking failure, because they didn't think the video evidence was strong enough. Our experts showed through the video evidence, which again is not necessarily relevant for your analysis of their opinions, yeah. But there was deceleration and then the individual stepped off at the end. They want to believe there was something happened unexpectedly and he was thrown off. There's no evidence of that. And Judge Horan correctly said neither Bullen nor Kerrigan did any analysis of the accident to support the fact that there even was a malfunction.
No accident reconstruction.
No accident reconstruction, no calculation of the speeds, no calculation of the forces on this individual. We did it and showed that this was an operator who made a mistake. But to suggest that this forklift forced them out, there's just no evidence of that. And on the point you just made, Judge Higginson, in terms of the testing of Boland's opinions, because he has these two opinions that it could have been a interference with the signal through the optical switch, or it could have been, or if you reprogram the code with after a, to stop the truck. There's no evidence that that occurred here at all. That's what the court ruled. You can't just say, it should have stopped when there's no evidence that the predicate event occurred. There was no evidence here of this truck's plugging or braking not working until at the time of the accident, zero. And when Mr. Bullen came and looked at the optical switch himself, he did 10 tests. And this was after that truck sat for 2 years in a dusty warehouse, not being used, not being maintained, never even being turned on, gathering dust. He tested that optical switch 10 times and it worked every time. And he then put a piece of dust in it. This is his admission. This is not me arguing. And I was there. And I asked him, he says, well, it just fell in when I knocked it in. He put it in the optical switch. And he acknowledges that was not there before it fell or he put it in there. The 10 tests he ran showed zero problem with the optical switch. And that's why Judge Horan said, we don't have a specific design, and we certainly don't have an evidence of a defect here. And he didn't take the next step, which proving his suggested optical switch is any safer. How can you compare the two when you don't even know what caused this accident?
Counselor, your time has expired.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to address the standard of the application of the presumption, the application of the presumption of 82.008. The governmental authority has never been established for this forklift designer or labeler manufacturer. So the summary judgment that rests on the application of a certain voluntary code should not be used as basis of dismissal for a claim that based on the 82.008. The error code that Mr. Sneed had testified regarding the 319, our expert report actually showed two alternative designs, one of which was essentially confirmed by Mr. Greiser, Crown's own witness, stated that the software could have been programmed to stop working when the 319 error had shown, which is an alternative that the manufacturer could implement in his software. It's a feasible and safer alternative as a matter of common sense. Another alternative that Dr. Bullen had proposed as a safer alternative was using different optical switches for the function, for dust and debris sensitivity, which could have shut off the machine immediately as soon as the dust or debris got in at the sensor's way. And for those reasons, we believe that the exclusion was improper. The standard is not, an expert doesn't have to prove the exact parameters or exact conditions how the unit is failed. The expert's opinion should have been provided to the jury for the jury to decide whether there was a safer and feasible alternative and that could have been implemented to prevent the accident. For those reasons, we believe that the exclusions were improper. And as well as the application of the 82.008. Actually, that is all I have on my rebuttal upon rest.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.